Dear Dhamma friends, hope you can pay your attention to the Dhamma sermon now. We were discussing Sabbasava Sutta. So Sabbasava Sutta also available in the Majjhima Nikaya, where Anapanasati Sutta is also available. And so this discuss a little of a different aspect, because as we know, when we consider various defilement levels, so asavas and anusayas are typically we call as sort of hidden. So it's difficult to recognize, and we can only recognize when they manifest and come to the surface of the mind. Especially when we consider latent tendencies, the traits we have, and call them as anusaya. So as they are fairly hidden, latent, it's difficult to recognize. So when they pop up to the surface of the mind, then we actually can recognize, provided we are mindful. So the development of mindfulness helps us to recognize these defilements, and especially when they come to the surface of the mind. And as we progress in mindfulness, actually you can recognize the defilements at their very early stages. And that is the, in a way, one advantage of development of the mindfulness, because we may not get overwhelmed by the defilements, rather we are in a position to recognize them at their very early stages, at their very inception. Now, as we progress in meditation, so recognizing these defilements and understanding various habits, maybe even wrong habits we have, is one of the important aspect of our meditation, because that is the only way to overcome these defilements. That is the only way to correct ourselves. So therefore Buddha mentioned that only when one can recognize, one can realize those defilements, those stains, then only he is able to be free from those stains. So that's a very beautiful statement in the Sabbasava Sutta. Buddha says, Janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayam vadami no ajanato no apassato. So that indicates that only for a person who can see and can recognize these defilements, these various taints, to him I call that there's a purification is possible. So therefore recognizing defilements is one of the key feature in our practice. And Buddha says, Panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. If one really wants to purify oneself, one has to recognize them, be mindful of them, and properly apply wisdom. Then only they can overcome these defilements. So that is one of the important aspect of meditation. Now, when it comes to asavas, or we call them as stains, so here Buddha come up with the 7 strategies to overcome asavas. So asavas we can say are sort of habits or even wrong habits which were in our mind for long, long time, because this is not our first birth, but we have been in this sansar for many eons. So as a result, there are various tendencies available in our mind, and various defilements are operating in the mind. So we have become somewhat programmed to these various types of habits. Now, how to overcome these habits? How to correct ourselves? So that is one of the key factor in meditation. Now, Buddha comes up with 7 strategies. The first one is by seeing, dasana pahatabba. The second one is by restraining. Third one, using wisely. I mean, when you are using any kind of a component, any kind of a commodity, or any kind of a item, at that time you have to reflect properly. Then only that is you are able to avoid any kind of defilements possible of arising due to that usage. So we'll discuss anyway in the future about that aspect. And then enduring, patiently enduring, and then avoiding, removing, and then developing. So likewise, there are 7 strategies Buddha mentioned, and they are in a way kind of a toolbox. You can use any of these tools depending on the situation. Depending on the circumstance, you can use any of these tools. Probably even several tools you can use. And now we have discussed the first one already. That is where the Yoniso Manasikara is given some prominence, where how one has to think. So basically when we are thinking in a wrong fashion, in a wrong way, so we may be, our mind get bewildered, our mind get really confused, and we become even sort of obsessed with various wrong views. So that is because of the wrong way of thinking. So how to think wisely? So that is one important aspect. So it is constantly our mind may be thinking, but are we aware of what his mind is thinking? Or are we careful of what we are thinking? So this is something that we need to take care of. Because if we simply allow mind to think whatever it likes, then we don't know what ultimately will happen to the mind. Because constantly it may go to various lustful thinking, various aversive thinking, or various deluded thinking. Ultimately, we have to suffer because our mind gets utterly deluded, utterly obsessed, and even can be depressed, and even can be agitated. So likewise, there are many sort of mental illnesses happens because of this overthinking. So controlling thinking or properly using thinking is one of the important thing. So that we discussed briefly last time, and there are Buddha specially mentioned, if you want to think, recognize about the Four Noble Truths. So this is a deep teaching. I'll take a separate session on talking on Four Noble Truths, but for the time being, we can say Four Noble Truths can only be applied on the mind when you have a fair amount of mindfulness. Otherwise, it's difficult to recognize suffering as suffering. Say, for example, when the mind is going through some sort of agitation, some sort of confusion, or even some kind of frustration, are we able to step back and look at frustration as frustration? Or any kind of domanasa, any kind of despair available in the mind? Are we able to recognize that rather than feeding it? So this is in a way kind of a lesson that we need to learn. And you can learn it gradually. Say for example, while you are in a walking session, say when your left foot is touching the ground, so now you can recognize that touching sensation. So touching sensation is one phenomenon, and this recognizing mind is another phenomenon. So there are two aspects, the object and the knowing mind. So likewise, we can understand, now even all these physical experiences, we can recognize as kind of objects of attention. So we are looking at all that experience objectively. We are not identifying with them, we are not recognizing with them, or we are not making a person out of that. We don't think that I am walking or I am feeling. Rather, it's a feeling. Rather, it's a mere element characteristic. So likewise, so we have to disengage from this experience, and then we have the capacity to look at it objectively. So this is one important aspect. Now, when it comes to Vedana Anupassana, similarly, say when there is pain available in, so there also you can recognize pain as pain, rather than crying, thinking it's a very painful situation, or rather than being sort of overwhelmed by pleasurable feelings, are we able to recognize them objectively? So this is kind of a practice that we are slowly learning. When pain arises, we are able to disengage from pain and look at it objectively. When pleasurable feeling arises, rather than sort of overwhelmed by it, so you are able to disengage from the pleasurable feeling, and you are looking at pleasurable feeling as pleasurable feeling. The same thing applies to Four Noble Truths as well. So when there is some kind of a suffering available, unsatisfaction available, so we should be able to recognize it. So this is suffering. There is suffering. There is some agitation. There is some frustration. there is some pain. So likewise, so you are recognizing it objectively. It is not my pain or I am suffering, rather there is suffering. And once you are able to understand it properly, then you may even able to understand the cause of suffering. So what kind of a cause has created it? It may be some sort of a desire, it may be some sort of a dislike. So likewise, there may be various causes that you can recognize. So once that is recognized, you can let go of that desire, and then the mind can again become very peaceful. So this peace of mind also has to be realized. So this is the third noble truth. So likewise, again and again, you have to apply these four noble truths to the mind. So then only we are able to practice four noble truths. Now this we may discuss, we can actually discuss this in the Dhammanupassana section of Satipatthana, maybe in a later time, where Buddha gradually takes us to that clarity of mind that understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and in a way, how to practically apply it again and again. So practically applying it again and again is the bhavana, that is the development. So that is the fourth noble truth. Again and again applying this kind of a strategy, this kind of a recipe to our own mind, so that we can recognize suffering or understand suffering, and again we can understand the cause of suffering, and we can let go of that, and again calm down the mind. So there are many methods available in overcoming asava, overcoming taints. So we are not going to discuss all these, but rather what is available in this sutta we can discuss. But anyway, I like to mention briefly, there are other methods mentioned at various other places. So practicing Satipatthana, for Satipatthana, also mentioned as a way of recognizing, or rather removing asava. And again, development of four spiritual powers, that is the Iddipada, that is also mentioned as a way of overcoming asava. Then the development of five faculties, Indriya, that is also mentioned as one way. Development of Anapanasati Samadhi in 16 steps that we already covered, discussed. So that is also mentioned as one way of overcoming asava. And then the Four Noble Truths, developing Four Noble Truths, as we discussed right now. And then the Noble Eightfold Path. And then seeing the impermanence on various things. Maybe the faculties, in the sense there's eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. Seeing the impermanence of that. Or seeing the outside aspect, that is the, say, form, sound, taste, smells, touch, and the mind, mental objects. So seeing the impermanence of that, so you can apply or you can recognize this impermanence anywhere. So that also is another method of overcoming asava. So likewise, you can see there are many methods in suttas mentioned to overcome asava, and in this sutta Buddha specially properly in a way tabulate seven methods or seven strategies to overcome asava. Now, when it comes to the second method, Buddha mentioned how to overcome asava using restrainment. Asava sangvara pahatabba. How to restrain ourselves so that the asavas, the taints, may not arise, or if the asavas have arisen, so that will not grow, but rather they become weakened. Now, so this is how one has to restrain oneself. Say, for example, you as practitioners or meditators, now suppose you are now trying hard to calm down your mind, restrain your mind. Suppose after some time you go and switch on the TV, or you are going to look at a movie with lot of disturbing scenes. And again the mind get agitated, mind become lustful, mind become angry. So likewise, again mind get polluted. So now all unarisen asava taints are now started to arise, because you have sort of agitated the mind. You have seen something not appropriate to see. Again, suppose you are going and listening some very loud music, lot of noisy music, and even sort of some emotional music. So that again can sometimes disturb the mind. Because suppose mind was fairly calm down, well restrained, but if you are not careful and if you are not restrained and you go and listen something very really disturbing, again mind become in a way upset, in a way sort of confused and even obsessed. Same thing applies to the nose. Same thing applies to the taste, I mean to the tongue and to the body and to the mind. Now this is where the restrainment is fairly important. So are we in a way handling our senses mindfully? Are we using our senses mindfully? Or are we allow them to sort of agitate or to gratify as they like? So this is something that we need to be careful. Now, just by meditation, you can't do everything. So you need some amount of restraint. You should carefully understand what are the kinds of objects that you are feeding to the mind. Through your eyes, are you going to pollute the mind? Through your ears, are you going to pollute the mind? Through your nose, are you going to pollute the mind? Through your taste, using the tongue, are you going to pollute the mind? Through using the body, are you going to pollute the mind? And again, when it comes to the mind, any kind of a mental object, are you going to properly handle it, or are you going to exaggerate it or to proliferate on it and ultimately pollute the mind? So these are something that we have to be careful, that these skills, that the way how to think, how to see, how to hear, all these are in a way very good skills we all have, very good resources we all have, talents we all have. But if we don't know how to handle them, how to restrain them, so ultimately our mind become really obsessed, really confused and really polluted. There's another beautiful story I can remind you here. And one time there's a Brahmin called Unnaba come and meet the Buddha. So he's a very wise person, wise Brahmin, and he come and have a discussion with Buddha. And he says, Bhante, I have observed some sort of a phenomenon. So there are forms for eyes, sounds for ears, smells for the nose, tastes for the tongue, and the touching sensation or tactile sensations for the body, and mental objects to the mind. Actually, he discussed only the first five. So there's a corresponding outside object. Now they are not getting confused. Basically, so I can't see the sound. I can't hear the eye. I can't hear sounds. Or ear can't see forms. Or nose can't see forms. Or nose can't hear sounds. Actually, they have their own private function. I can only see forms. Ear can only hear sounds. Nose can only smell or recognize the smells. Tongue can only recognize the taste. So likewise, all these faculties have their corresponding counterpart. They are not getting confused. So he make this comment to the Buddha, and he make a very beautiful question. Ultimately, who is going to eat them? Who is going to handle them? Because none of them remain on these faculties. You know, once you see something through your eyes, so it does not stay in your eye. Once you close your eyes, it has gone. Similarly, when you hear some sound, so if you want to close your ears, that also can stop, and maybe sound may disappear and sound have stopped, and it may not remain at ears. Similarly, the smell, similarly the taste. Suppose you are eating something very delicious and you are enjoying it. After you finish it, after you drink some water, everything gone. Now we can understand none of these external stimuli does not come and stay at these faculties. So who is going to handle them? Who is going to store them? Who is going to eat them? So this is the question when this Unnava Brahmin is asking from the Buddha. Now Buddha answers that, telling that is the mind. Mind is the one eating them. Mind is the one storing them. Mind is the one ultimately handling them. So this is the answer Buddha is giving. Now Unnava Brahmana asks another question. Now you can understand, from our childhood, we have seen so many things. We have heard so many things. We have sensed so many smells. We have tasted so many tastes. And we have sort of felt so many touching sensations. Now you can again understand, so more we use these faculties, the more we can even pollute the mind. So as a result, when compared to a little child, the elders have fairly polluted their mind. Because little child not yet has enough experiences and not enough signs and perceptions and various defilements to pollute his mind, because he has used his faculties for a less period. But we as adults, so we have seen so many things. We have heard so many things. We have sensed so many, say, smells. We have tasted so many tastes. And we also have cognized so many or recognized so many touching sensations. So ultimately, they all go and disturb the mind. They all go and store in the mind. Not everything, but at least the most vulnerable part, the most prominent part, or even the most defiled part, go and store in the mind. So that is how the mind is storing in a way, memorizing in a way. Now when you are seeing something, our mind is storing most of the, say, critical part. So is that useful to the mind? Or is it useful to ourselves? Or is it harmful to ourselves? So when you are hearing something, again, if someone is blaming you, so that may stay in the mind for a long time. And you are memorizing it again and again. But suppose you are hearing a kind of a typical new, kind of a lesson, say bana. So it may not stay in your mind. But if someone blame you, that may stay in your mind for a long time. But is it useful? So likewise, if mind is really get defiled because of some kind of an external stimuli, so that is being stored in the mind. So there we can understand, more we handle these faculties, so in a way we have fairly polluted the mind. So then, as a result, this Brahmin asks, what is the solution for this? What is the sort of refuge for this kind of a mind? Then the beautiful answer Buddha gives is the mindfulness. That mindfulness, the sati, is the refuge for that mind. So we are using that mindfulness to, in a way, to purify such mind. So already our minds are fairly, in a way, polluted. And we are applying this mindfulness medicine to purify it. Now, here, in this restrainment, Buddha says, so don't continue polluting your mind. Don't unnecessarily see, or don't see unnecessary things. Don't see wrong things, bad things, using your eyes. Don't hear bad things using your ears. And similarly, using nose, using tongues, using body, and using the mind. So in a way, so you have to guard the senses. So this is what mentioned as Sangvara Pahatabha. So we have to guard our senses. So therefore we have to understand what are the suitable places we have to go. What are the not suitable places, inappropriate places we should avoid. So likewise, we have to have some common sense to understand, now I am trying to develop my mind, so I should not add more defilements to it. It's already polluted. There are, in a way, huge amount of defilements are already there. Now I am trying to overcome them, to sort of remove them. So if I am again and again feeding defilements, again and again polluting the mind, so this can never be happened. This can never be succeeded. So in a way, we have to guard the mind. In a way, we have to guard the ears. In a way, we have to guard the eyes. So likewise, these faculties we have to guard. So this is what Buddha mentioned in the rest training, where one has to be sort of guard our senses. So in if we are able to guard the senses, there are various defilements. There's a potential of arising. Those may not arise. Suppose you are suppose you have the possibility of seeing some pornography or some sort of a bad thing. But if you are not seeing it, then that possibility of arousing lust, polluting your mind, is not there. Because you restrained yourself. You understand the repercussions. You understand the consequences. So you avoided it. So you have restrained yourself. So this is what mentioned here. So we have to guard the mind. We have to restrain ourselves. So then that helps to avoid any unarisen defilements to arise. And if there are already arisen defilements, so since we are restraining ourselves, they start to fade away because they are not getting enough food. So this is what I like to mention today in this short Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So we have four questions today.
Yeah.
First question is on the sitting practice. A little bit long question. Dear Bhante, I am a novice to the mindful practice and thank you very much for this valuable program. I have been practicing based on Bhante's instructions and trying to understand the essential components of this path. I recall Bhante often mentions that we should develop the capability to identify mindfulness, concentration, clear comprehension while we engage in continuous practice. I would like to present my understanding of the above for Bhante's kind review in the background of walking and sitting practice. So the first one is mindfulness, so there's a definition. I identify mindfulness as a different mind state than the usual mind state when I am with the thoughts. While mindful, I become aware of various sensations of the body. This awareness is sometimes widely spread across many observations and sometimes go deep into a specific observation. Example, while walking, sometimes I observe sensations on the sole of the foot, leg movements like riding a cycle, how the walking impact transfers to the upper body, etc. And sometimes only the sole of the foot and how temperature and pressure varies, then the impact for the moving forward and differences of left and right foot. Shall I continue with the other two? Or?
Sure, okay.
So then the second point is the concentration. So there's a definition. Time to time, I get the ability to focus on one observation, deep down, when being mindful on the body. This state is very relaxed and always feel calm, serene and light-weighted. While focusing on one thing, the other observations and sensations seem cut off or faded. And then the third one is a definition of the clear comprehension.
Wait for a second then. Yeah, so mindfulness, I think you are correct. So basically, you are able to establish mindfulness, and it is in a way not the normal mindset. So as you said, our normal mindset is typically maybe staying in the past or in the future. So always not in the present moment, but in a different world in a way. So that is the typical defiled mindset. But in the mindfulness, so we are sort of grounding ourselves, earthing ourselves. We are in this, we are trying to well earth at this moment. We are trying to awaken to this moment. So at that time, in a way to hold the mind for the time being, to establish on something in the present moment, so we are using various objects. Say for example, breathing. So breathing is some sort of a ordinary process available in the body. So we are using it as a technique, as a tool, to maintain our attention so that mind also stay in the present moment. So likewise, the That's kind of exercise helps us to bring our attention to the present moment. And now mindset is different, as you said. So not kind of a previous deluded mindset, but rather now there's a kind of awareness, kind of an awakenness, where you know what is happening right now. So in a way, now there's a kind of wise mindset, awakened mindset, so that we know what is happening right now. Yeah.
So the third one is clear comprehension. Sometimes I observe how awareness can be maintained or lost across multiple observations. Example, differences between the left and right foot, observations across the posture junctions, knowing of mindful and unmindful times, drifting the thoughts and coming back to meditation objects again. The above are the ways and signs I understand mindfulness, concentration, and clear comprehension while on practice. Appreciate Bhante's advice.
Yeah, sure. So this clear comprehension, actually, what you have recognized is also correct. And even more than that, it's actually developed. Say, you, as you said, you can recognize posture junctions and the various postures distinctly, very clearly, and that is also clear comprehension. Similarly, even the same object, you can see various facets, how it is beginning, how it is how the middle, how the end, and what are the other aspects available. And say, is it a single object? Is it a collection of objects appear like a single object? So likewise, so as you closely pay attention, there are some information, there are some details available, and that is also comes under the development of the clear comprehension. So you are clearly seeing the object. You are trying to fully understand the object. So that is the coming towards the clear comprehension. And that actually paves the way for development of the wisdom. Yeah.
Question 2 of 4. It's a sitting practice question. Dear Venerable Sir, my sitting practice is mindfulness on breathing. I have been practicing sitting with half lotus position for some time. I feel very comfortable with this posture and feel the relaxed and composed nature from the start. After 10 to 15 minutes, the breath fades away and my focus shifts to the body posture. Recently, I started getting some numbness in my legs after 30 to 35 minutes on this posture. During this time, I am more or less focusing on the body posture and small movements in the body. When my attention shifts to the numbness, I start shifting the body to some direction to avoid or decrease the numbness. This happens volitionally, while the other body movements I was focusing were without my involvement. I would like to check with Venerable Sir about this volitional adjustment and if I should try to avoid it. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think it's all right, because now you are paying more attention towards the development of the concentration and you are paying more focus on the breathing. Time to time you feel that numbness developing on your leg. So that appear like a sort of a hindrance, kind of an obstacle. So you are, since you are giving prominence to the development of the concentration, you are slowly changing the posture. So that's all right. But later time, once, suppose you are doing it a couple of times, but assume that now your concentration has fairly developed and you are able to maintain that concentration closer to the nostril for a considerable period of time. And now assume that there's a numbness developing. Now, instead of changing the posture, probably you can try focusing that numbness and see whether you can recognize some sort of a phenomenon, some sort of a behavior there. Because why we develop kind of a concentration is to utilize or use it for a kind of an observation. So this observation is the one helping us to understand about the body and sort of to develop the clear comprehension and the wisdom. So this observation is one of the key factor in this practice. Now see whether you can use already available concentration to do this observation. And it is not only for numbness, but there are various other sensations available throughout the body, and you can sort of place your attention there, focus your attention there, and you can try to recognize all these various feelings, various sensations. So that way, actually, you are in a way progressing and trying to understand your body, recognize various characteristics, and you are trying to even recognize various feelings. So that is how we are slowly progressing towards the vipassana.
Question number 3 of 4 is a general question. Dear Bhante, what is the meaning of Cheto Vimukti? Is it the same release of the mind after seeing the unattached mid-ground during the practice? Bhante described in the Dhamma talk sometime back.
Yeah. So actually Cheto Vimukti is possible in many different ways. And even if one is practicing Metta, there are also Cheto Vimukti has mentioned. And such Metta Cheto Vimukti. So it's a kind of a complete release of mind can happen even in samatha meditation or even in vipassana meditation. Both sides are possible. The point is our mind typically is sort of obstructed, typically being hindered, typically being narrowed. And when we are holding something, say you are holding something, you are focused onto something, and as a result your mind has become narrowed. Your mind has become obstructed. Your mind has become locked. But how about completely sort of expanding the mind? Completely releasing the mind so that there is no any kind of a limitation to the mind. There is no any boundary to the mind. So the mind become or the awareness become completely boundless, completely released. Completely there is no any kind of narrow-minded thing, but rather the whole mind has completely pervaded, the whole awareness has completely pervaded. So this is the kind of idea or the practically what is happening in the Cheto Vimukti. So you are using, one can use many techniques to reach this kind of a Cheto Vimukti. Say for example, I will explain using Metta that is available in Samatha meditation. So suppose you are typically starting Metta meditation using yourself. Say, may I be well, may I be happy. So likewise, people may start. So that is in a way still narrow because you are considering yourself as a person and it's a single person. But later you are enhancing that, say, Metta, loving kindness. So you are now taking various other people and another group of people and all the people in a village, all the people in a town, all the people in a city, all the people in the country, all the people in the, say, in the whole world. And now not only human beings, you are expanding it to all the beings, all the devas, all the brahmas, throughout the universe. Now likewise, now you are sort of pervading the loving kindness. You are expanding the mindfulness, or rather the loving kindness. So you are like now a kind of a loving kindness source, like a light bulb which can or the sun which is spreading light throughout the whole universe. Now the mind is like such a thing which is spreading metta everywhere. There is no limitation, there is no any particular direction, to all the direction, to all the beings, to everywhere. So that is how the mind will get a sort of released. Now there are no boundaries. Now there are no any kind of conventional, typical restrictions to the mind. Now all the restrictions are gone. Mind has become boundless. Mind has become limitless. And that we call apamana cheto vimukti. There are 4 types of apamana cheto vimukti. The limitless cheto vimukti. Metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Similarly, one is possible to do this in vipassana meditation. Animitta cheto vimukti, sunyata cheto vimukti, appanihita cheto vimukti. So likewise, there are various such kind of expansion, such kind of release is possible in vipassana meditation as well. Yeah, back to you.
Question number 4 of 8, general question. Dear Bhante, based on the Dhamma talk, it is not so clear to me that if we need to remove all taints, asava, without any traces, which is 100% removal before we realize the truth. Much merits for your explanation.
No. Actually, don't worry that too much. So I'll show you this thing. So now you can see the diagram again. So there are, so Buddha talks about 10 fetters, and in these 10 fetters, and according to them, Buddha later categorize various attainments. So when you are developing all these strategies, when you are using all these strategies and developing mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, you are going in the Noble Eightfold Path. So basically, three fetters, if you are able to completely overcome, then one is called Sotapanna. So still seven fetters are still available. So this is one stage. And the second stage, two more fetters are being... that is sensual lust and the repulsion, patiga. So that is being calmed down. It's not to the very high level. Calmed down. So then one is called as sakadagami. If one is able to completely uproot these two also, then one is called an anagami. So that is the what we call as five lower fetters. Five lower fetters, oram bhagya sanyojana. So that is how one can become an anagami. And now only another five left. So that is only uprooted when one becomes an arahant. So therefore, it is not that we immediately can overcome all these things and all the fetters has to be removed in one shot. It may not happen. So it's a kind of a gradual removal, gradual diluting, and then ultimately remove part by part, little by little. So this is how, that is why Buddha's teaching is, or the practice is called a gradual path. It's a kind of a gradual overcoming of defilements. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8. This is the sitting practice question. Dear Venerable Swami Nuhans, during sitting, I notice a cycle of thoughts telling me to go and have food. And I told my mind my stomach is full. Again, cycle starts and telling me to buy clothes. Now I told my mind I have clothes and no need, clothes I need and no need to buy.
Yeah.
At this stage, mind was circling these on and on. I was watching it. I feel every other time that this is a trend. How should I handle it with metta for your advice?
Yeah, actually you can laugh to yourself. So that is what I also sometimes do. This mind is like a kid. Mind is like a child. Asking this, asking that, crying for this, crying for that. So this is like temporarily satisfying our children. So sometimes you give a toy, but you know he may not definitely be satisfied with it. After some time, he may ask another thing. So typically, if we can recognize all these sort of childish desires we have, so that is also important. So that is what in the Sabhasa Sutta I have mentioned. So this is how we know ourselves. This is how we can recognize our defilements. So this is very important. Actually, it is not that we have to sort of look down ourselves or to beat ourselves. Rather, when such defilement arise, when such desire arise, so like a mother looking after a child, so we have to recognize them and sort of sympathetic to ourselves. So, and in a way, rather than, as you have done, rather than become a victim of it, so you simply recognize it and let it go. So that's why in the desires, so when you recognize there's a desire and you know that it is harmful or you know it is not useful and you already have clothes, your stomach is already full, but the desire is there. Desire is asking to eat. Desire is asking for more clothes. But you recognize the desire. So you are not a victim of the desire. If you have become a victim of the desire, you go and eat something. You go and pick something to wear. But you know very well, I am full. I have enough clothes. And this is desire. And now you allow it to go. And you simply let it go. Yeah.
Question number 6. question number 6 of 8 is a general question. Dear Pante, can we say that when we get up in the morning, first thing in the morning, our minds are clean from pains and thereafter it gets diluted with our memories and experiences? If we are not mindful, appreciate Bhante's advice. Thank you, with metta.
We can't say it is completely free from taints, but we can say at that moment taints are not activated and mind has its, and so far we already have some kind of a clarity, some kind of a purification, so that is available. So the defilements haven't activated yet. So that is why when it comes to various levels of defilements, Buddha talks about three levels of defilements. The most subtle level is the taints. Most subtle level is the hidden tendencies. That is the anusaya. So they are latent. You can't recognize them. They are latent. And then there's a manifested level that is called the pariyutthana. That is the and if you use them for long time, then it becomes a obsessive thoughts. But you can recognize, okay, there is a lust available, there is an anger available, there is jealousy available. So likewise, you can recognize the defilements are available in the mind. So that level is called pariyutthana kilesa. And assume that you couldn't recognize them, but you immediately acted upon them. You become a victim of these defilements. And you immediately, suppose you got an anger and you immediately acted upon it and you blame another person. You sort of hit another person. And there we do the transgression. We are breaking a precept. So we are do the transgression. So that is called vithikkama kilesa. So therefore Buddha comes up with this kind of levels of defilements, categories of defilements. And so the anusaya, recognizing that latent tendencies, is a difficult task. And so that we have to do slowly. So we have to allow them to come to the surface. Then we can recognize them. Rather than promoting that desire, rather than promoting that habit, that trait, we have to simply let it go. So likewise, we have to gradually weaken that habit. And that is what Buddha mentioned here. Janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayam vadami. So when it comes to the surface, you recognize it. So you understand it is a kind of an activation of a hidden tendency. But now I am not promoting it. Now I am not feeding it. Rather, I allow it to dilute. Rather, I am now breaking the habit. I am not promoting the habit. So it will start to fade away. Still, that habit will start to sort of weaken. So therefore, when you are waking up in the morning, so that pariyutthana kilesa and vithikkama kilesa are absent in a way. So the mind is fairly clean, but that doesn't say that our mind is completely freed or completely pure, because the latent tendencies are available in the mind. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. General question. Dear Bhante, I understand that doing meritorious deeds increase your taints. But isn't it better to do meritorious deeds to avoid a bad rebirth in case you had to be reborn? I mean, if you don't achieve Sotapanna state or higher, it's better to be reborn in a good place, isn't it? That's the another question.
So you have a big plan in the, it seems, in your mind. Anyway, so actually this is very difficult to plan. I know it's not like an insurance plan or something. Very difficult to plan the future birth, because I mean there are so many factors come into the picture. But anyway, Buddha talks about two aspects in Sammaditti. The first aspect is the mundane aspect, what you call the Laukika Sammaditti or Kammasakata Sammaditti, where you understand, okay, still some ignorance is there, but anyway, that is necessary. So that this level, not the ignorance is necessary, what I am telling is this, this understanding is necessary, that I am a good person now, I am believing in karma, I am therefore trying to do good things, try to avoid bad things, there are consequences of the bad karma, bad actions. So likewise, you are now becoming a good person, a sappurisa. And that is called laukika sammaditti. Where still some ignorance is there because you recognize yourself as a person, as an individual. But later you have to practice mindfulness and the wisdom. And there you are gradually will shift yourself to the lokottara sammaditti, supramundane sammaditti, where you are now not promoting a self. You are not promoting an individual. You are not promoting any kind of a self-view. Rather, you recognize various defilements and even you recognize how this eye-making, mind-making is happening. So this in a way very subtle, because even the meritorious deeds, as you said, can cause to make a self. So this is a very subtle point. Say for example, you have given some money to someone as a help, and later you come home and you can recall it and you can be happy about it. True, no problem. You can be happy about it and you can make a self as well. Again and again you are recalling that your good deed. Oh, I did it that. If I was not there, he was in a big trouble. So I am the one helped him. I am the one really generous. My neighbors are not generous. I am the one really generous. So likewise, you can promote I. But on the other hand, suppose when it comes to the, say, lokottara sammaditti, so you recognize that eye making. So you recognize that eye making and simply let it go. So you are not promoting that eye making. So likewise, so more and more the meditation, vipassana meditation, especially help us to recognize that eye making, mind making, and how defilements are operating in the mind, and slowly allow the mind to be freed. Allow the mind to maintain kind of an unattached state of mind. Yeah.
Question number 8 of 9. So this is again a general question. Bante, can you explain a bit more how a painful observation like numbness can be used as a meditation object? Is it by focusing on the feeling or the physical characteristics of the numbness? That's the other question.
Yeah, I think both are all right. So when you are paying attention to numbness, so the physical characteristics also may be available. So I don't know exactly what you meant by physical characteristics. How it is arising, how it is changing, what are the, say, whether it is a single numbness or there are a kind of a combination of so many subtle numbness, minute levels of numbness are available. Or likewise, you can actually at the first instance, maybe those are the ones immediately available, not the other very subtle aspects. So immediately what is available is that you know now there's a kind of a numbness at any particular place. Now you are paying your attention to that place and now you recognize it. Now you can understand the sort of physical aspects of it. Fine. But later, you probably can understand there may be some unnecessarily I am adding a resistance towards that. So there's an unnecessary part, mental part I am adding it, so you can avoid it. Now you see numbness as numbness, objectively. And as a result, you can see it more clearly and more in a kind of a unattached mind, more in a sort of moderate mind, middle mind, sort of an equanimous mind. And you can understand clearly now numbness is not a single thing. I mean, it's a kind of a combination of so many painful feelings. And probably you have the facility or capacity to recognize this minute feeling. Each and every minute feeling, they operate like a kind of a combination and conglomeration. So altogether it appears like numbness. So these are very subtle aspects you can recognize by observing any feelings, not only unique for numbness, but you can apply this kind of a theory, this kind of a situation to any feeling. Yeah.
So we got not the last question. We have a few announcements, but they might go a little bit over time. Is that all right?
Fine.
So this is the last question, question 9. It's a general question. Bhante, regarding 3 levels of defilements you mentioned, can we say it's like an iceberg? 90% of the defilements are hidden under anusaya or the tens.
Sure. Actually, I wanted to sort of combine this with the typical modern psychology aspect. I forgot it. So it is nice that you have reminded it. So we can say like that. So I think that is Carl Jung, or I don't know, someone has come up with such a model. So you have something called superego, ego, and id. So that is the kind of a new interpretation about the mind. So we can say the latent tendencies are actually kind of the iceberg which is under the water, and the other two parts, the vithikkama kiles, what you call the transgression level, and the pariyuttana kilesa, the obsessive part, that is very much like can be seen. So they are very much in the upper half, or sort of on top of the water, we can say like that. So in a way, another way we can say subconscious and the conscious level. Yeah.
So that's the end of the questions. We have a few announcements to make. So it's just about the session. So this is the 35th session we have done. So we've nearly done it for 7-8 months, and so we will not be having the next two sessions, that is the 27th of December and 3rd of January session, 3rd January 2021 session. So the next session will be on 10th of January, so same time, and if all the links and everything will be the same. So in this period we will be having three retreats actually. So they are done online, as well as people will actually go to the locations in Australia. So it's organized by Brisbane, Sydney, and Canberra. So the information regarding these retreats were actually sent out in the email that was sent out with the program reminder yesterday. So I'll just share the screen and show the can you see my screen?
Yes.
Thank you. So this information would have come to you in an email yesterday. So if it didn't come to you, please share your email with us and we can resend it. So it has the dates, the time. There's another, in the email, there was another attachment with the program as well. So this has all the details, and obviously anyone logging in through Zoom can use the Zoom links and meeting ID, and also the organizers' details are there at the bottom, you can contact them for any other questions you might have. But the email that we sent out yesterday already had the program as well, so it gives the comparison time with Australia and Sri Lanka, because Swami Kansa will join online. So there are a couple of programs that you can join. So on a daily basis, there will be the Dhamma Sermon and the Q&A that will be live on Zoom. So the IDs and everything is different. So maybe on the 23rd or 22nd, we'll send it again. But if you can please send us an email, I'll just put our email on the chat window now. So if you didn't get the email yesterday, please send an email to that, or you can share it with in the chat, your emails on the chat window with me now, and I'll add you to the distribution group. And also, when you join this program, if you also, because on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, on a Saturday, we send out an email with the reminder and just the links and everything. So if you did not get that email, that also means that you're not in our distribution list. So if you can use our email, mindfulnessforyoungadults@gmail.com, it's on the chat window now. and send us an email. We can add you to the distribution list, so you get the reminders of when the next programs are, and also it has the links to the Google form and the previous session recordings and things like that. I'm just telling this because I know a few people come join the session, new people join the session all the time. So final thing we want to say is we want to thank Swami Nohanse for
his time. One moment, Chamila. One small thing. So this Brisbane retreat conducted by Bhante Dhammajiva. So in the program, there's a slight request we made. In Sri Lankan time, it was 12:30 to 2 is the question and answer session. But today, Bhante requests to make it 1 p.m. So there could be a slight time difference, time change in the Brisbane retreat. But everything else is mentioned as in the schedule that you all have circulated.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think when you send the reminder, maybe on the 22nd, we will update it and send it as well.
Yeah,
so
that's good. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So mostly we put the Sri Lankan time, because then you can convert it to your time based on the time zone. Otherwise, you'll have to have Australia Eastern time, Western time, daylight saving time, non-daylight saving time, and then obviously we have people from UK joining in, and they have different time zones as well. So I can see most of you are actually sending me the your emails. So I will get to the questions next. I think there are a few people who have put things in the chat window. Regarding the program, we want to all thank Bhante for taking his time to do these sessions every week, and we have a lot of questions and we always go over time. So all the merits that we've gained by this program so long, we want to pass it on to Swami Nohanse. So sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu.
And
I wish you Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And hope next year will be a healthy year, so that we all be free from all these difficulties, and so that we can live a very peaceful life and a healthy life. Thank you very much for participation.
Lastly, I would like to thank all the participants actually, and for joining and also providing feedback regarding the session. So we made a few changes regarding the program as well based on your feedback, and also for spreading the message about this program to your friends and colleagues. So I'd like to end the program and with that one day again. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Theravan Saranai.